This podcast is one of the many good ones on the Self Defense Radio Network.
Hey, this is Paul Lathrop from the Polite Society Podcast. You know, a long time ago, I was looking for a tactical mall ninja podcast, and I fell upon this one, and I like this much better. You're listening to Bob Main and the Handgun World Podcast, a practical show for a practical guy like me.
Welcome back, Handgun World Podcast listeners. My name is Officer Greg, and I'm coming to you from the state of California. I'm sitting in for Bob this week. As you know, Bob has taken a little time off to gather his thoughts and find his direction, and I'm more than happy to help host this show and sit in with you and chat about guns. I can talk about guns until the end of time. I can talk about guns and shooting until the cows come home and the sun goes down. And usually nobody's listening, so I appreciate you guys sticking with me and having me into your homes and your cars and listening just to a little bit about what it's like to be armed and carry guns behind the granola curtain or the great state of California. I'd like to start by introducing myself. I know some of the characters that call in and write in on the Handgun World podcast I always find very interesting. Wilcilla Steve and Mexican Joe. I always kind of find myself wondering who these guys are and what they do for a living and what their lives are like. So let me give you a quick rundown about who I am. I'm a full-time police officer here in California. I've been on with one of the largest police agencies in the state of California for 18 years. I'm a road patrol officer here, so I push a black and white patrol car around. In addition to those duties, I'm also a range master at my department. I teach police officers how to operate and fight with a .40 caliber pistol, a Remington 870 shotgun, and the SIG M400 tactical rifle. I am also on a SRT team, a special response team, which is sort of like our agency's riot control team. We get sent to hotspots like Sacramento and Berkeley to help keep everyone safe when some of our young impressionable minds get out there and exercise their freedom of speech. Inside that SRT team, I'm a grenadier. I'm on a grenadier squad. So we tote around a nice big 40 millimeter grenade gun that fires these cool little rubber baton rounds, as well as gas rounds and aerial distraction devices. So I have one of the cooler jobs in one of the cooler jobs. I am also a law enforcement active shooter response instructor. Several years ago, a few of us were selected to be trained by the Department of Homeland Security in how to coordinate all of the local law enforcement agencies throughout the state and get everyone on the same page about reacting to an active shooter in a school or a church or any other kind of event. They wanted to get everyone on the same page so that we weren't all stepping on each other and injuring each other when we responded to these schools. So my agency was tasked with traveling around the state, gathering up smaller agencies and running them through some basic active shooter response. So that was quite a fun little job I was tasked with. On a side note here, as I look down at my phone, if you happen to notice the Handgun World Podcast logo, the little red round circle with the white Glock in the center and three perfectly placed bullet holes, that was the logo I designed for Bob a couple years ago. I used to be a graphic designer and an art teacher, so I still dabble in that. You can also go over to the Self Defense Radio Network website and the banner at the top of the page that shows the radio tower with what appears to be a Glock 26 floating above it. That was also another logo that I cranked out for Bob a couple years ago. And Ben Branham, if you're listening to this, we need to get working on your logo too, buddy. So in addition to that, being a police officer, I'm also a CCW instructor, concealed carry permit instructor here in Central California, which you might find a little odd. We do issue quite a few concealed carry permits in this state, and we'll get into that a little bit later too. I'm also a 4-H shooting sports instructor. I've been working with the 4-H as their shooting sports leader for my county for about the past 8 years. my daughters, when they were about 7 and 9 years old, came to me and said, "Hey, Dad, there we want to get into shooting sports, and there's no leader, so we'd like you to take that over." So, of course, being a dad, as all of you know, you cannot say no. You have no choice. And I became, I went through the training to become a shooting sports leader for 4-H here. And that's been a very rewarding project for the last few years. We're going to talk about that a little bit later on, too. As I mentioned, I'm a former art teacher and graphic designer. So I didn't come into this from any military background. As I mentioned, I'm a police officer for 18 years. But other than that, I've just been a recreational shooter and hunter since I was about 6 years old when my dad gave me my first lever-action Marlin 22 rifle. And after that, I was hooked. So in addition to departmental training, I also put myself through a lot of outside training. I attend a school down in the Los Angeles area called TFTT, Tactical Firearms Training Team. It's a school put on by a lot of retired Marines, and they have a very motivating program. I've attended quite a few pistol, rifle, and shotgun courses, and have really enjoyed every minute that I've spent and every dollar that I've spent with them. In law enforcement, a lot of times we have to go out and get our own training in addition to departmental training, and that happens on our own dime, and we have to take our own vacation time and do our own travel to make those things happen quite often. Departmental training in any police agency is barely adequate, and it would surprise you how poorly trained some police officers are, and it would be shocking. So in addition to that, I'm also the shooter on a very popular YouTube channel, the Tal Flader Mouse channel, which has at this time about 934,000 subscribers, nudging a million subscribers here pretty soon. It's a YouTube channel that deals primarily with shotguns and shotgun slugs, but we test all kinds of different rounds sent to us from all over the world, and we test different targets, different media, and see how it reacts to these different shotgun slugs. So if you're looking around for something to view on YouTube, check out the Tau Flader Mouse channel, TauFlederMaus channel. I think you'll like it. Okay, my topic today is armed behind the granola curtain, owning and carrying guns in the state of California. If you live in Corn Rocket, Nebraska, and you just don't think that this is applicable to you, or you don't want to listen to some police officer drone on and on for 15 or 20 minutes, I encourage you to reach down and push pause, put in your favorite Taylor Swift CD, and we'll be back with you here in a few minutes. Okay, so first off, let's get a couple of things out of the way about guns in California in general. Everyone knows, or probably should know, that we have a handgun roster, what they deem a safe handgun roster, as if one type of handgun is somehow safer than another type of handgun. This roster is currently being challenged in the courts as unconstitutional. California has decided that every firearm, every handgun sold in the state of California needs to pass a series of specific tests. Now, I'm not sure exactly how all the tests go. I'm not sure exactly all the parameters they're looking for. But what I have heard is that each manufacturer of handgun needs to submit 3 samples of their firearm, and that those firearms also come with quite a fee just to be tested by the Department of Justice here in the state. And once those firearms are tested and deemed safe, in quotes, then they can be sold in California over the counter to average citizens, let's say. Outside of the safe handgun roster, law enforcement can buy any handgun that they like that's been produced anywhere in the United States. So it's kind of a joke because law enforcement, myself included, can go out and buy any handgun, any firearm, whether or not it's on the roster. And then a month or two down the road when we decide we don't like it, or if we don't like it, we can sell that private party transfer to another individual, to any non-law enforcement officer. And, of course, that sale has to go through a FFL. We're not allowed to sell any firearms in the state of California person to person without there being an FFL involved. But this just goes to illustrate how silly that handgun roster is, that I can buy a law enforcement-only pistol, I can hold on to it for a month and decide I don't like it, and then I can turn around and sell it private party to a non-law enforcement officer, and he's perfectly legally able to purchase that from me. So it's just a roster that regulates the kind of firearms that are sold as new from an FFL, from your local gun shop. The roster is a joke, as we can all imagine. It is suspected by some that this roster is actually just California's way of gradually diminishing the amount of handguns that are sold in California. And that's probably true. As we know, everything that goes on in this state regarding firearms pretty much has an agenda behind it. So would not be shocked to find out. However, that being said, in my safe, I've got just about everything that I would like to own in California. And, of course, the average Joe out there can manage to get his hands on just about every gun that he wants. All he has to do is look around for a police officer who previously bought, say, a Springfield XDS, which is an off-roster gun. And once that officer wants to sell that to him, the individual then buys that gun directly from him. I've done it myself. I've had a couple of guns, including, sorry, Bob, a Glock 43 that was just a little bit too small for my hands. If you guys go over to my YouTube channel and watch me shoot, you'll see I've got big old baseball mitts for hands. And a little dinky guns are a little bit too tough for me to get a good grip on. So the Smith & Wesson Shield is about the smallest that I prefer to carry. And I found the Glock 43 just a little bit too tiny for my hands. I did buy and sell one of those to a friend of mine. I actually bought and carried for several years a Springfield XDS 45. Really liked that gun. But then, of course, Smith & Wesson came out with a Shield in 45. And overall, my personal opinion was that it was just a better gun. A little bit bigger, much easier to shoot for me. Held more rounds. Magazines were easier, and I wasn't a big fan of Springfield's very aggressive checkering on the XDS. So I sold that gun to a very excited gentleman who was happy to get his hands on one, and went out and got myself the Shield 45. Another stupid rule we have here is called the 10-day waiting period. You've probably heard about that. We're not the only state that has a 10-day waiting period. But we are probably the most famous for our ridiculous 10-day waiting period. It is called, actually, by the authors and by the Department of Justice, a, quote, cooling-off period, in which one evidently who intends to murder someone has time to collect their thoughts and realize that murder is not the way to go about their grievance. This cooling-off period is just another way of restricting your Second Amendment rights in our state, so in my opinion. This cooling off period also is being challenged in court right now. Here's an interesting little fact. I, who have a safe full of firearms, if I wanted to do someone in using a firearm, I would not need to go down to a gun store and buy a new one and wait 10 days to cool off and change my mind. I would simply use a firearm that I already own. Also, as a police officer, I have access to guns on duty and off duty. So one of the things that's being challenged in the courts right now, and of course it's a very slow process, is the fact that anyone who already owns a firearm or any police officer should be exempt from this 10-day waiting period. It really makes no sense to have a multiple gun owner have to wait 10 days every single time he purchases a firearm so that he can, quote, cool off and doesn't do something rash. So another one of our silly laws that only makes sense to politicians in Sacramento. We're not the only state, of course, that does things like this, but we are currently challenging this in court, and we'll see how that ends up. We don't have very good luck in this state with getting these ridiculous things overturned. Regarding long guns, this is kind of a new thing as of our little fire Armageddon that happened about a year ago, was voted in a big string of laws that drastically restrict our rights even further in this state. Regarding long guns, shotguns pretty much aren't affected. The only time a shotgun would be affected if it was a semi-automatic. It technically now can't have a pistol grip. But as far as your AR-15 rifles, you probably see a lot of conflicting information on YouTube, or at least confusing information out there about what to do with an AR-15 rifle if you live in California. There are some crazy contraptions that are being invented by some of these manufacturers to convert your gun into some sort of a break-open dealio where you pull a grenade pin and the rear takedown pin swings the gun open, because by California law, if the action is open and the firearm is unusable, then it is now legal, and your semi-automatic firearm pretty much becomes a break-open, break-action gun when you need to change the magazines. So they intend for us to crack open the gun, eject the magazine from the side, and then once the magazine ejected, insert the new magazine, and then close the gun, push the pin back in, and resume firing at the band of bikers that have come kicked in your living room door. So obviously that's kind of a silly contraption. I don't know a lot of people who are converting their guns to that method. You can also take your previously owned bullet button guns. You've all heard about the bullet buttons here that restrict the magazine release button so that it has to be ejected with a tool, typically an ink pen or the tip of a 5.56 cartridge. And those bulletin button guns were pretty much made illegal unless a person takes them in and registers them as an assault weapon. And we can get into how ridiculous the term assault weapon is, but I think you and I are all on the same page that assault weapon is sort of a misnomer here. So that also, to me, is not a viable option for our firearms. The thing I've chosen to do with my AR-15s is to make them what we call California compliant. And again, bear with me because this sounds a little ridiculous, but California decided that evil features on an AR-15 are dangerous and should not be allowed. One of the evil features, starting at the front, they don't like flash hiders for some reason, because I guess for some reason you're going to snipe at a schoolyard full of children from the bushes. They want to be able to see you and your muzzle flash. So they have required that muzzle flashes be taken off. For me, this is not a bad thing, as I'm a big fan of a muzzle brake instead of a muzzle flash anyway. I find it makes the rifle much more shootable, and I kind of like it. Anyway, I have swapped those out on my rifles even before this ban. The other thing they don't like on this is a collapsible stock, which the vast majority of AR-15 owners use. You have a couple of options here. You can either drive a pin or a nail through your collapsible stock and make it a fixed stock, or you can take it off and purchase a fixed stock and mount it on there. I, again, never was a fan of a collapsible stock. I didn't really like the wobble there. So I've always been a fan of just replacing my stocks with an A2 or even an A1 stock on one of my rifles here. So now, the one that gets me, the thing that I really had the issue with, that I'm not a fan of, is doing away with our pistol grip. The pistol grip was, of course, deemed an evil feature. So one of the ways you can get rid of the pistol grip is to take the entire grip off, replace it with some of these, you know, Monster Man grips or some of these goofy-shaped lumps of plastic that really I find kind of annoying for the hand. They don't feel natural. You can take the pistol grip off and also replace it with things like the Thordston stock. If you don't know what that looks like, look that up. Google the Thordston stock. It's a pretty viable alternative. It converts your rifle into sort of a space-age-looking firearm, but it makes it pretty usable. I mean, it doesn't really limit the function of the rifle at all. And even better, California essentially has done us a favor in that when you convert your rifle to a compliant rifle with your muzzle brake, with your fixed stock, and no pistol grip, you can now do away with your bullet button. So any magazine that you own can be freely inserted and ejected from the magazine well using a standard old AR-15 magazine release button. So I thought that was pretty cool of them to do us that favor, unbeknownst to them. Wait till they figure that one out. My option that I chose is these little Kydex slip-over fins that go around the grip. They usually clamp down using three hex head or flathead little bolts. And they essentially are just little Kydex clamshells that go over the pistol grip and prevent your thumb from wrapping all the way around the pistol grip. So I have installed those. I've purchased a couple of those aftermarket. Installed those on my rifle. The reason I like those is because if I ever go out of state, which is coming up here pretty soon, my retirement before too long and heading out of state, if I ever travel out of state or if I decide one day that I need the rifle in its original configuration, no matter where I am, due to whatever circumstance has befallen our community, I, with a turn of a couple of screws, can pull that fin off and have a regular functioning rifle. So that is how I've chosen to convert my AR-15s to be very legal, so that I won't be tempted to run out and mow down a church full of worshipers on Sunday morning. Now, regarding magazine capacity, you've also heard that California has a 10-round magazine capacity ban. That is true for most handguns. For all new handguns that are sold, it has to be 10 rounds or fewer. That does not include the one in the pipe. So 10 plus 1 is perfectly legal. And of course, as we all know, that'll get us through just about every gunfight. However, I think it's a little silly. In fact, the officers at my office currently carrying their .40-06 pistols, it's an 11-round magazine. But once they retire, it is issued to them, or they have the option of buying the pistol. But the magazines are replaced with 10-round magazines because, of course, the state of California cannot give their officers an 11-round magazine. That would make them automatically murderers. So, yeah, go figure that one out. So anyway, magazines are restricted to 10 rounds in this state. That does not, however, apply to previously owned magazines, magazines that came in before the magazine ban was originally enacted, which I believe was 1994. Again, as we know, magazines aren't stamped with dates, most of them, so there's no way that they can tell how old your magazine is. So one thing I always advise my students is if you've got a magazine, you can use your magazine, you can keep your magazine. You don't have to take it out and bash it with a hammer, run over it with your car. However, I recommend that if my CCW students are out roaming the streets with their firearm, that they probably just stick with a 10-round magazine, because why ask for the extra headache of having those couple extra rounds? What you need to do is just carry a spare magazine. I know recently on Handgun World podcast that came up, whether or not to carry a spare magazine. I'm a huge fan. In fact, on me at all times is not only my primary firearm, whatever that may be for the day, but always two spare magazines. And, you know, when I'm carrying a Glock 22, it's a 15-round magazine, one in the pipe, and two 15-round backup mags, that's quite a lot of ammo. I'm not really expecting to get into a 50-round gunfight, but as has been discussed here on the Handgun World podcast before, it could possibly be that my magazines are damaged. It could be that I drop a magazine in a pond or something as I'm changing mags and I need to get to another one. I just feel better having a lot of ammo on me. I carry two spare magazines on duty in addition to the one in the pistol. So I, off duty, really like to carry two extra magazines. It really comes into play when you're carrying a small capacity pistol, of course. If I carry my Shield 40 caliber, has a 7-round magazine, one in the pipe, I absolutely will not go out the door without two spare 7-round magazines in a weak side magazine pouch. So magazine capacity, kind of a moot point. As I tell my CCW students quite often, you are going to be just fine with your 10-round magazine. That may sound kind of pompous coming from a police officer who has no such restrictions in this state, but I fully believe that you are just fine protecting yourself and protecting your family with 10-round magazines or lower capacity. And I, in fact, as I mentioned earlier, this is a very hot, dry, flat farmland that we live in here, and I often am wearing just shorts and a t-shirt, much like Bob there in Texas. So I'm carrying a very small pistol that has a lower capacity, and you always got to have a spare magazine on you to reload that pistol or fix a malfunctioning firearm. All right, that being said, let's get into concealed carry permits in California. I'll try and make this brief since most of you who do not live in California will not have any use for this information. And those of you who do live in this state of California, in a lot of areas, won't be able to access a concealed carry permit where you live either. Out here, if you ever look at the electoral map of the state of California, it is a red state with blue edges over on the coast, all the way from San Francisco down to Los Angeles and San Diego, and then, of course, a little blotch that goes inward there at Sacramento. And unfortunately, those are our voting populations, much like Oregon and Washington and New York. Most of our state is conservative, farm people, ranch people, and just blue-collar workers. And unfortunately, our voters, however, reside in those cities, and they are the ones that control our politics and therefore gun laws. So we do issue quite a few concealed carry permits. Here where I live in the center of the state, the three surrounding counties at least, in fact, four surrounding counties that I know of, issue permits pretty much out of hand. The minute you walk in and ask for your permit, you do have to go through a background check in California. Not only a local check, but they send your name up to the Department of Justice, who runs you through a little more thorough check. You do have to pay some fees, usually in the neighborhood of $200 in this state. And you do have to, in some counties, you have to bring in your firearms just to be glanced over by the lady at the desk to make sure you're not trying to register an AR pistol or some kind of a fully automatic firearm. But I am personal friends with two county sheriffs on either side of me who have mandated that their people issue CCWs to anyone who applies unless crime has prevented you from getting that permit. And in California, the crimes are obviously a felony or what is called a violent misdemeanor. Those would preclude you from having a permit. So I don't have the exact number, but there are a lot of concealed carry holders in this the vast majority of this state. So another misconception that people have that nobody around here can get permits. Now, I have a lot of friends and people contact me from Southern California asking about getting their permits. And, of course, if you live in L.A. County, San Diego County, anywhere of those places, San Francisco or anywhere up north, you're not getting a permit. There's just no way, no how, unless you have a residence down here in Normalville, and then you can, I guess, get a permit down here and use it up there. That brings me to that little topic. Our concealed carry permits in California, once I obtain my permit here in the center of the state, I can roll around anywhere in the state of California with my concealed carry permit. It is good anywhere in California. And also, it is good in quite a few states. I want to say we're at about 36 states, if I remember right. I always recommend my students go to handgunlaw.us. You've all heard of that site here before. And when they click on the state of California, it shows all of the states across the union that have reciprocity with the California CCW. I guess those states figure that if you jump through all the hoops to get a California CCW, which is a very rare thing indeed, that you must be well up to qualifications with their state. So we do have some neighboring states, however, Oregon, Nevada, that don't recognize the California permit. Arizona does. So, if you're traveling across the United States, you might have to pick and choose your route. But anyway, our permits are good throughout the state. And but good luck getting them in any of those restrictive counties. The county sheriffs, we are a may-issue state, so the county sheriff has the discretion of whether or not to issue those permits. And county sheriffs in the big city areas are just elected politicians. They're really not cops. They don't carry firearms. They don't wear uniforms. They wear suits, and they attend meetings all day. And when someone comes and asks them for a permit, they are laughed out of the building. That is, of course, unless you are a major sports star, movie star, or some kind of a politician, then you'll get a permit right away. But a very rare thing indeed in those counties, I should say. But in my job, rolling around out here and stopping people all day long, I run into ranchers and farmers and just average people, housewives and school teachers, who have permits on them, who have firearms on them all the time. They're a little nervous. They believe in the state of California that they have to notify law enforcement when they're stopped. That's another myth in our state. This is not a right to notify or a requirement to notify state. You don't have to tell police officers that you're carrying a gun. But as Masad Ayoub has often recommended, if it's likely to be seen when you're going for your wallet or your purse or opening your glove box, probably good that you let the officer know. We would certainly appreciate knowing before we happen to see the gun sitting there. Whenever I have somebody tell me that they've got a gun, I'm actually just curious as to what they're carrying. And we kind of joke back and forth that, hey, as long as you leave yours in your holster, I'll leave mine in my holster, and we'll take care of our business here and send you on your way. My department's policy, of course, is that anytime you come across a firearm in a car, we're to take that firearm temporarily from the driver. We're to make it safe and lock it in their trunk, along with the magazine out of the pistol and any live rounds out of the pistol, and then send them on their way. And they are advised that when they drive off somewhere further down the road, they can make that pistol hot again. That just makes sure that any officer who is encountered a CCW holder or someone with a firearm, it just kind of ensures that he is the only one that is armed at the time of that encounter. That might be a good rule, but I can tell you that we don't follow that, at least out here where I work in Realityville. Person advises me they've got a concealed carry permit and that they've got a firearm on them. I give them the big thumbs up. I thank them for carrying their firearm. I know that one day they're very likely to be my backup if I'm rolling around on the ground with somebody. So, I very much appreciate those folks who carry their firearms. And like I tell all my students, and I would also recommend to every one of you, if you have a concealed carry permit, please carry your gun. Take your gun with you everywhere you go, folks. Quite a few of the students that come through my class are of the mind that, in fact, I've had them tell me directly, I'm only going to take this gun when I go up to, let's say, Fresno or Stockton or some of the rougher towns. Well, that's silly. That's like saying I'm only going to put on my seatbelt right before I get into a crash. As we all know, you don't get to pick and choose when you're attacked. And these days, attacks are coming while you're at home. Attacks are coming in our small, nice, quiet communities. We have quite a few towns around here that are just like little Mayberry. But people are getting their doors kicked in, and, drugs are rampant around here, so tweakers and other such miscreants will come through, and they don't prey on the crappy neighborhoods in Stockton or Oakland. They're coming into the nicer towns to get nicer things from nicer people. So, folks, if you've got a concealed carry permit, you have been granted one of the coolest privileges in California. Please, please carry your gun at all times. I live by the old rule, pants on, gun on. I keep my gun on me even when I'm here at the house. I might look a little paranoid, but hey, what are you going to do? You can't tell when somebody's going to kick in that front door. There's also guns strategically located around my house that my wife and daughters know how to operate, so they can get to one quickly should something happen. I live in a small town out here, and I run into quite a few of my past students, and I'll always kind of give them a lighthearted concealed carry check if I run into them at Walmart. Hey, you got your gun on you? And about 50% of the time, they roll their eyes and say, no, it's out in the car, or I left it at home. It's kind of hot. And, boy, I'll tell you what, folks, if you've got that permit and something happens, I don't know how you could live with yourself knowing that you could have protected yourself, your family, or others because you were issued a permit and you were properly trained in how to deploy that firearm, but you decided to leave it at home because it was 105 degrees today and it just wasn't comfortable. So our permits here in California expire every 2 years. It's a very easy process to renew them. I sit with past students. In my classes, one of the things I offer is the courtesy of, if you've paid to come through my class the first time, all your renewals until the end of time or as long as I am doing this are free of charge. I ask the students to come back to my classes and sit. They have lunch on us. I provide lunch at my classes because we're in a kind of a remote location. And they are welcome to come back to the class free of charge and sit through, and I give them a renewal certificate. They take that down to their issuing agency, which is usually the county sheriff. They pay approximately $52, $56, depending on the county, and they are granted a permit, usually overnight, the renewal. The background check is a local background check, and once they are locally cleared every 2 years, the permit is just handed right back to them. They are allowed to carry instantly. And then, of course, that packet is sent up to California DOJ, who runs another background check on them, but that is after they've been issued that, reissued that permit. So if DOJ all of a sudden stumbled across a red flag, I suppose the county sheriff would have to go back out and pluck that permit out of your wallet. So our permits here, as I mentioned, are issued by the county sheriff. they can and do put stipulations on your permits. Up until a couple of years ago, you were allowed to go onto a school campus in California with a CCW. Certain county sheriffs would put on the bottom of the permit that you are not allowed to go on a school campus. You're not allowed to go into a bar. They would type things on there like, this must be surrendered to any police officer who asks for it. They could make their own restrictions because they were the one issuing you that, quote, privilege. So as of a couple of years ago, California, in its wisdom, decided that someone found out that with a CCW, you could carry a gun on a school campus. And after the Umpqua Community College shooting in Roseville, Oregon, near my hometown, they decided that, oh, my God, we can't have CCW holders carrying guns onto California campuses. The horror. So they enacted a rule. It was very quickly signed by the governor, and it instantly kept all CCW holders from stepping a foot onto school grounds. Law enforcement officers, off-duty or on-duty, can. Active-duty military can in the course of their duties, which I can't see other than some Red Dawn scenario why active-duty military would need to step onto a school campus with their firearms. But so, of course, I advise all the students in my classes to stand outside on the sidewalk and wait for their kids to come to them after school. And, of course, if anything happens inside that school, they are to charge right in there. Consequences be damned. Saving your child is much more important than the minor, low-level misdemeanor that you're going to get for stepping foot on that school with that firearm. So that's just another one of our lovely restrictions that we now have on our concealed carry here. Other than that, we have all the same restrictions that most states have. We can't carry in a post office, can't carry on a federal installation. I live near a large Navy base, and it employs quite a few civilians in addition to military. Quite a few military members, quite a few Navy pilots come through my course because, folks, they want to carry a gun off duty when they are bouncing around town. My town, actually, by name, was listed on the top priorities for ISIS on their hit list, let's say. So it was kind of laughable to us that they put this dinky little town out here in the middle of nowhere on their hit list. And, of course, we don't expect much to happen out here, but quite a few Navy pilots were a little shaken, and there was some more credible threats made by foreign militants about how to go and attack military members' families. So quite a few Navy pilots and wives have come through my course. I also get a lot of quite a wide cross section of blue collar workers, farmers, ranchers, quite a lot of school teachers, and just a lot of really good people come through this course and learn how to shoot a gun. Most of them are very new to firearms, and once we get them up to speed on the basics of how to shoot a gun, we go through all the laws in California, and after about a 12-hour course, they are sent out the door with a certificate. And they take that down to their county sheriff. It's about a 1-2 month wait here in California. We've been up to 6 or 8 months wait in the past. After the San Bernardino shooting, there were a big flood of people wanting permits, and that stretched things out for us. So it can vary. Okay, I think I've rambled enough about concealed carry here in California. Just know that it can be done, and it is done by thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of California residents. So we are not as gun-free behind the granola curtain as one might think. Let's get into another passion of mine. I kind of mentioned a little earlier, 4-H shooting sports. Being a avid shooter, gun carrier, range master, police officer, I am passionate about getting our kids involved in the shooting sports. And while most of you are probably familiar with your local 4-H shooting sports program, it's just like the Boy Scouts shooting sports program or the NRA's shooting sports for kids. In fact, it all follows the exact same outline. Here in California, it's often a surprise to quite a few people that we have 4-H shooting sports, at least, again, out here in Normalville. The shooting sports program is administered by 4-H, which in our area is run by the UC Davis Department of Education, or Continuing Education Department. UC Davis, of course, is not a very gun-friendly or conservative-thinking school, so we're kind of often shocked to find out that shooting sports is still allowed. Obviously, shooting sports with kids, safety is paramount. We can't have one single injury or else the program could completely go away. So we drive safety into them like you wouldn't believe. We start out every session with an overview, probably 15 or 20 minutes of just safety. And I have the kids lead the safety briefings so that other kids will listen to them. They don't want to listen to an old police officer any more than you guys do. So anyway, speaking of that, I just looked down and noticed on the clock here that I've been rambling on for quite some time, so I will make this quick, but I just wanted to let you guys know that our shooting sports program out here in the center of California is actually thriving. I have in my club alone between 40 and 60 kids every season, all the way from 9 years old up to about 18 years old. And after that, they become my junior leaders, and they assist me in training the younger ones. We do recreational-style shooting, mostly just kind of fun shooting at bowling pins and targets during the year. And then through the spring, we warm up and practice shooting at some NRA targets, because sometime around May or June, we participate in a postal match where we mail in our targets up to Siskiyou County, and they grade our shooters against other shooters from around the state. And our kids get some ribbons and awards and certificates, so that's kind of cool for them. They're very excited. The shooting sports discipline here in our local 4-H in my county is one of the biggest clubs, one of the most popular clubs. We pretty much focus just on the 22 rifles and pistols. We're limited to 22 caliber, also pellet guns, but we don't dabble in that too much. Several years ago, I went out and kind of beat the streets when all went to my local gun shops and got a couple of donations from a couple of nice gentlemen of some Ruger Mark III 22-45 pistols. I donated one myself, so we now have four that belong to the club and one that's my own personal pistol. And the kids love shooting 22 pistols, which is a whole new challenge safety-wise, as you can imagine, with a short muzzle that's very easily pointed at toes. So we usually run about a one parent per student line out on the shooting line to make sure that muzzles are always pointed in the right directions. 22 rifles run the gamut from bolt action, lever action, semi-automatic, tube fed, magazine fed, you name it, we shoot it. We've had a couple of 22 rifles. They're kind of old beaters, but it was very generous donations by some old retired Navy guys. Speaking of Navy guys from the local base here, while I'm out at the range conducting either CCW classes or 4-H, I've had some very generous Navy guys come up to me and provide me with at times 200, 300, 400 rounds of 22 ammunition. And let me tell you, folks, during those years when 22 was impossible to find, they kept us afloat. We would not have been able to keep this club going, being that we were limited to 22 caliber ammunition. So these nice gentlemen kept us alive and kept us going. So all completely on the donations of others. We use my own personal rifles and those rifles that I bought my daughters. But the kids bring their own firearms out. We use donated spotting scopes and sandbags and whatever we can cobble together. So we're not a very fancy club here, but I'm very proud of the fact that every season I can turn out 30, 40, 50 more kids who now believe that firearms are not evil, as they're being told all the time in school and in movies and in comic books and in cartoons. We want to show kids that guns are fun, guns are safe, as long as they are handled safely, and the guns can protect you, guns can protect your family, and that they're not going to jump up off the counter and shoot you. So, of course, safety is paramount with kids, but we have yet to have an injury, knock on wood, and we will not, because we just are super crazy about safe gun handling in 4-H. Folks, that about wraps it up. I know I've droned on a long time here, probably longer than the normal Handgun World podcast. I appreciate you hanging with me. Again, I can talk about guns all day long, and I could keep on going now for another hour or two, but you don't want to listen to that. You want to put in that Taylor Swift CD. So I appreciate you being with me today. Our thoughts and prayers out to Bob, that he finds what he needs out there and gets a nice little relaxing break. And folks, I just encourage you, always stay armed. Be vigilant out there. Be careful. We are now on a war footing in this country. Myself and my other police officers are briefed almost every single day from some FBI briefing that we are on a war footing now. We have domestic terrorism. We have gangs coming up from Honduras and Guatemala that are just out to do no good. So, Folks, carry your firearms out there. Keep your heads up and your eyes up. Keep your heads out of your cell phones, please. Being aware of your surroundings is the A number one way to stay out of trouble. And if I can convince my two teenage daughters to put their cell phones down for a couple of seconds and be aware of their safe surroundings, I certainly hope I can convince you to do the same. When you come to a red light, take a look around and enjoy the scenery. Let's leave those phones down and be aware of our surroundings so that we know when we need to deploy that firearm, if it is needed. Be safe out there, folks. Drive nice and slow, buckle up, and we will talk to you soon. If you want to get a hold of me directly, you can contact me at opie16046@gmail.com. That's opie16046@gmail.com. I'd love to hear any of your feedback, comments, or questions. Be glad to answer anything I can that I would know about. All right. Take care out there, folks. Be safe.